Well, first this morning, the war between Israel and Iran has come out of the shadows, threatening to drag the region deeper into conflict. World leaders are calling for calm and restraint after Israel yesterday launched a retaliatory strike on Iran. Explosions were reported in the central Iranian city of Isfahan, which is home to a key military base and research facilities associated with Iran's nuclear research program. But Tehran says there was no damage done to the city and its nuclear facilities are secure. This latest tit-for-tat exchange comes almost a week after Iran launched a concerted missile and drone attack on Israel territory following a suspected Israeli strike on the Iranian consulate in Syria that killed two Iranian generals on the 1st of April. Israel is now, of course, 6 months into a war in Gaza against the Palestinian militant group Hamas, which is backed by Iran, and diplomats around the world are desperately working to stop those tensions widening into a broader regional war. Tridhar Parsi is a leading Middle East expert. He's the executive vice president of the Quincy Institute and former president of the National Iranian American Council. Tridhar Parsi, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tridhar, what can you tell us about Israel's attack on Isfahan? There are reports it was limited in scope, or is that just Iran playing down the damage?
No, I think that both of those things are true. This was clearly a far more limited and restrained attack than what the Israelis likely would want to have had. And at the same time, the Iranians have further downplayed it, treated it as if it was nothing, denied that it was missiles involved instead of saying it was only drones, and essentially treated it as if it didn't even qualify as being characterized as an attack. And by that, not triggering Iran's promise that it would respond swiftly and harshly to an attack. But since this wasn't an attack, Iran doesn't need to do it.
Okay, I want to come back to Iran's response or next move, but why has Israel targeted the city of Isfahan? What's its significance and what message does a strike there send to Iran?
Well, the Iranians have an air base there. They have industries there that are producing some of the drones that were used in the retaliation against Israel after Israel had hit Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st. And it's also pretty deep into the country, and not too far away from there, they also have some very sensitive nuclear sites. So the message may have been from the Israelis a show of demonstration that it can hit that deep into Iran and it can penetrate Iran's air defenses in order to be able to inflict significant damage on Iran's nuclear program.
Well, as you say, Tridhar, Tehran was, prior to this Israeli drone attack or attack of whatever kind it becomes known, was threatening a maximum level and immediate response. It has since said no immediate plans for retaliation. But does that mean no plans for retaliation? Do you think there will be any kind of response, or is this going to be the end of it?
No, I think we're at a pause right now, and this conflict that has been going on between Iran and Israel for some time, but has been in the shadows, will likely go back into the shadows, if we're lucky. Not because that's a great scenario, but because it's a much better scenario than the current one, because this type of open warfare between the Israelis and the Iranians does have a much more significant escalation risk, and that can drag the entire region into a war, including the United States.
But for 30 years, as you say, it has been a shadow war between Iran and Israel, two sides engaging in cyber attacks, assassinations in proxy countries, that kind of thing. Now that both countries have, for the first time in 30 years, I think, fired directly onto the other's territory, does that change the equation?
I think a key thing that has changed is that prior to the Iranian attack on Israel 5 or 6 days ago, and what happened last night, is that we knew that the Israelis had the capability of striking Iran. That's not a surprise in any way, shape, or form. But what the Iranian attack revealed is not only that they have the capacity to do so, even though most of their missiles didn't go through the air defenses of Israel, seven of them did. Mm. And had it not been for 72 hours of a heads up, the US, France, the UK helping Israel, then it's not so clear that the Israelis would have managed to stop so many of them. In fact, most of them were stopped by the United States, not by Israel itself, which suggests that the surprise here, actually, the thing that has changed is now we have validation, confirmation that the Iranians actually have a significant capacity to also inflict pain and damage onto the Israelis. That the Israelis could harm Iran was not something that anyone doubted. But now we also know that the Iranians can harm the Israelis.
Okay, well, both the attacks from Iran and Israel have been, I'm quoting you here, heavy on symbolism and light on destruction. I think that's the word you wrote this week. So with these tit-for-tat strikes then, was that the point? You know, I can see the point for Iran to demonstrate to the world that it has this capacity, validation of its capacity. What's the point for Israel, in a sense,
apart the Israelis from showing felt that they it can had to streak? I think the Israelis felt that they had to do something because leaving this completely unanswered would, in their view, be an acceptance of Iran having managed to deter Israel. But with this limited strike and the divisions that exist inside the Israeli government about it, because you had one of the ministers tweeting that the attack was lame, I think that kind of suggests at the end of the day that this ultimately ended up not in favor of Israel because of what I mentioned earlier on. It is the Iranians that gained a degree of deterrence in this equation. And had Israel not started this by taking it out of the shadows and striking the Iranian consulate in Damascus on April 1st, Israel would probably have been better off today.
Okay, so as you and others are saying, and certainly Netanyahu's detractors in Israel are saying, this has diminished what has been Israel's key defence policy, really, of deterrence, in a sense. Before this strike, the EU foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell had warned, and I'm quoting, "I don't want to exaggerate, but we are on the edge of a war, a regional war in the Middle East, which will be sending shockwaves to the rest of the world, and in particular to Europe." Do you think he's right still, even though both these attacks were contained? But do you think he's right perhaps because Israel's deterrent capacity has perhaps been exposed?
I think he's right, but it's not because of Israel's deterrence being weakened as a result of the attacks over the last 2 weeks. He's right because the region is on the brink of war, and as long as the war in Gaza continues, the slaughter in Gaza continues, and the U.S. either vetoes it or doesn't allow the type of pressure that is needed to actually get to a ceasefire to come through, then we are going to see that fighting fuel all other tensions in the region and potentially bring the region to a war. So in that sense, it's true. In the sense that the extra vulnerability or the new vulnerability of Israel breaks down the balance of power and opens up the pathway for a war, I would not agree with, because essentially that would then say that the only way to have peace in the region is to have the Israelis being overwhelmingly stronger than everyone else. That may sound good from a Western perspective, but if you're in the region, that means that 34,000 Gazans can be slaughtered to death without any response by anyone else. And if they can respond, then only then would we say that the region is being destabilized.
It brings us back to the central question, which is how do you stop a war? How do you stabilize the region? You and others have theorized for a long time that Israel has been trying to engage the US in a war against Iran, that for Benjamin Netanyahu in particular, that's been his end game. Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, that's pretty well established, and many books and accounts by former officials have been written, the latest one by General Milley, who served as the Joint Chief of Staff for Donald Trump, who revealed how Netanyahu was pressuring Trump on numerous occasions, particularly after he had lost the elections in 2020, to attack Iran. So that track record is quite clear. The question, of course, is if that has had any particular impact on the conduct of Israel in the last 7 months, in the sense that has Netanyahu seen the war in Gaza as an opportunity to also then expand the war onto Iran and drag the U.S. into it? That is certainly something that U.S. officials have been worried about, not a direct war with Iran, but by invading or striking Lebanon and Hezbollah first, which then, of course, very likely would drag the Iranians into the war as well.
And then here, with this retaliation this week, has Netanyahu boxed the U.S. and the West more broadly into defending Israel in a war against Iran because, you know, there was strong support, ironclad support voiced by Joe Biden and others, the security of Israel after that attack from Iran. If this escalates, does the US join or get forced into this war because it's expressed that support for Israel?
Based on what Biden himself has said, which is a bit of a break from what previous presidents have said in these instances. But based on what he has said himself, on the surface sounds not particularly controversial. U.S. has ironclad support for Israel. Yes, but if you take it in the context in which Israel was the party that escalated matters first and whose prime minister seems to have an interest for prolonging and widening the war, then that actually becomes a roadmap for Netanyahu on how to drag the United States into the war. Yes, the United States would not participate in an offensive attack against Iran, but as soon as the Iranians retaliate, then the United States would be committed to defending Israel, which means that ultimately it doesn't make any difference. The U.S. still gets dragged into the war. So I think whereas the Biden administration actually has performed quite well, arguably, in the last 2 weeks, tactically in making sure that this doesn't completely go off the cliff, at the same time, the conduct of the Biden administration, as well as this episode of not drawing a clear red line in front of Netanyahu, has led to a strategic trajectory of the situation, which actually makes things worse consistently. We're in a much worse situation now than we were 7 months ago or 5 months ago. So to ultimately truly be able to shift things around, we don't need just tactical maneuvers that avoid the worst case scenarios. We actually need strategic maneuvers that put us on a much better trajectory. And that the Biden administration has not managed to do.
All right. And strategically, you'd have to say the last thing any US president and the American people would want right now, you'd think, is to go to war again in the Middle East. I mean, China is the main game for the US right now, isn't it? It can't afford to be as distracted.
Yeah, I mean, from a strategic perspective, absolutely. The conventional thinking amongst U.S. decision makers and strategists is that the focus has to shift to China. But on a more immediate level, if there is a war in the Middle East that the U.S. gets dragged into, and particularly if it is because the Biden administration didn't put enough of a clear red line in front of the parties not to drag the U.S. into it, then that will cost him the elections most likely, because it will be unbelievably unpopular amongst the American public.
Following the missile attack on Israel, Iran now faces a new round of sanctions from the US, Britain and Europe, targeting drone and missile deliveries to proxies in Gaza, in Lebanon, as you mentioned, in Yemen. How will that affect the war in Gaza, given that Hamas is militarily backed by Iran?
It will have next to zero impact on that. Iran has been under these kinds of sanctions for decades, and it has not changed the strategic picture in the desired direction of the West the slightest. On the contrary, it has ultimately been counterproductive, because it has pushed Iran further and further away into the arms of Russia and China, and further away from the West. If, for instance, the Trump administration had not pulled out of the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, then officials in the Biden administration that I've spoken to say themselves that they do not believe that Iran would be supporting Russia in the war in Ukraine today. But having been more or less completely cut off from the West, Iran doesn't have much to lose, and it actually has made the situation worse.
Tudor Pazi, thank you very much for joining us here on Saturday Extra.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tudor Pazi is the Executive Vice President of the Quincy Institute and former President of the National Iranian American Council.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.